Much has changed since then, and we drove out to where we used to live on Friday afternoon coming in, and all of that HEB stuff and all that stuff around Mount Bellevue wasn't even there then. Yeah, you know you're old when you start talking this way. I remember back, I remember when. Oh my. But I've got a new definition of eternity. Here is my definition of eternity. When you hit the Texas line on Interstate 10, it's road construction forever. And I think that's my new picture of eternity. It just goes on and on and on. You know how every state will say road construction due to be completed in 2037 or something silly like that. I think Texas ought to just say road construction due to be completed never. It's just ongoing. It never ends. That's eternity. But I'm glad Julie can be with me, and I've got some good news and bad news. The good news is she's with me. The bad news is she's going home later this evening, so I'll have to be solo the rest of the week. So, all right. The word has been put on me to quit. Make sure I quit on time. All right. One of my favorite stories of all time is the story of Chippy the Parakeet. And I want you to listen to this. Then we're going to make some application. Chippy the Parakeet never saw it coming. One second he was peacefully perched in his cage. The next he was sucked in, washed up, and blown over. The problems began when Chippy's owner decided to clean Chippy's cage with a vacuum cleaner. She removed the attachment from the end of the hose and stuck it into the cage. That's when the phone rang. And she turned to pick it up and had barely said hello when Chippy got sucked in. The bird owner. To do is just sit and stare. That's life. One moment in life, everything is calm. There's no noise. There's no confusion. There's no chaos. And the next moment, you're hit with a sudden storm that you never saw coming. And storms are like that. They arrive when we least expect them. And so it's amazing to me how quickly life can go from calm to chaos. Lightning strikes your house and every appliance is fried. The message on the voicemail says, "Hey, Bob, you know that report I said is due next Friday? It's actually due on my desk. I've got to have it tomorrow at 9 in the morning." The mechanic who told you the repair on your car would probably be minor calls with these words, "I've got bad news." Or your spouse calls and says, "Honey, we got a letter from the IRS. Or your boss calls you in and says, "You're a good worker, but..." Or your teenager taps on your door at midnight on a Friday night and says, "Dad, I got a question. Does our insurance cover the other guy's car?" And it's amazing how quickly life changes. From calm to chaos. And if you've ever been there, If you've ever been caught in that moment, there is a day in the life of Jesus you need to know about. Because it would be a day in which Jesus would receive devastating news. It would be a day in which he received a threat against his own life. It would be a day in which there were interrupting demands. It would be a day where he would have doubting friends. All in the same day. And somehow through it all, he remains calm. He didn't blow up. He didn't bail out. Although I'm sure the temptation was there. My Bible is open to the 14th chapter of Matthew, and I'd like for you to open your Bible there. Matthew chapter 14. Because if you've ever ridden the roller coaster of emotional pain from sorrow to celebration and back again, and you wondered, does God know how I feel? You have to see this day to get the answer to your question. Because before this day is over, Jesus is going to run the entire gamut of human emotions. I want to begin reading in Matthew chapter 14, beginning in verse 1, and we'll read a few verses. At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the news about Jesus. And he said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead, and that is why miraculous powers are at work in him. For when Herod had John arrested, he bound him and put him in prison because of Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip. For John had been saying to him, 'It is not lawful for you to have her.' Although Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd because they regarded John as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday came, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Having been prompted by her mother, she said, 'Give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist.' And although he was grieved, the king commanded it to be given because of his oaths and because of his dinner guests. And he sent and had John beheaded in prison. And his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. His disciples came and took away the body and buried it. And they went and reported to Jesus." Now when Jesus heard about John, what news does Jesus receive to start this day? He gets the news that John the Baptist is dead. Now, who is John? Well, John was the prophetic forerunner of Jesus. Physically, John was a cousin of Jesus. He was a friend of Jesus. Later on, Jesus would say, "Of man born of woman, there's none greater than John the Baptizer." So the one person who knew Jesus and his mission better than anyone was dead. Now, when Jesus heard about John. Now, if you're taking notes this morning, I'm going to give you six things that happened to Jesus that were very emotional. Had to have been emotional, because it would be emotional for all of us. Six things. So, number one, write down intense sorrow. Intense sorrow. When Jesus heard the news about John. Now, we could say, well, we all know those who have passed away. True. But John the Baptizer didn't, quote, pass away. He was murdered. He was beheaded by the heinous Herod. And so imagine, if you can, getting the news that your closest on this earth not only has died, but he has been killed, brutally murdered. And you can begin to feel what Jesus was feeling. The hurt, the pain, the anger, the sorrow, the intense sorrow. But if you're still writing, write number two. Write down immediate threat. Immediate threat. We're going to go to Luke's account. In fact, we're going to jump from the various accounts here of the same day. We're going to go to Luke's account because different ones provide us with different things about the day. In Luke chapter 9, verse 7, verse 8, verse 9, Dr. Luke says, "Now Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was happening, and he was greatly perplexed, because it was said by some that John had risen from the dead, and by some that Elijah had appeared, or others, one of the prophets." Now, verse 9, "Herod said, 'I myself had John beheaded. Who is this man about whom I hear such things?'" Here it is. "And he kept trying to see him." Herod kept trying to see Jesus. So they told Jesus more than just news of sorrow about John. Encased in that news of sorrow about John is a veiled threat, a warning. Because the message comes to Jesus, the same Herod who beheaded John is looking for you. He wants to see you. Veiled threat, perhaps. A reason for concern, absolutely. So go back to Matthew's account, back where we were in Matthew 14 and verse 13. Matthew 14, 13. "Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself." Because of sorrow, and now because of caution, or at least precaution, Jesus needed to get away. But before he could get away, there's another element that happens today that Matthew doesn't tell us, but Mark does. In Mark the 6th chapter and verse 30, Mark chapter 6 and verse 30, it says, "The apostles, the 12, gathered together with Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught." So they bring to Jesus the news about the death of John the Baptizer. They bring the news to Jesus that the one who killed John is looking for you. At the same time, they bring news to Jesus about what they have been doing and the victories they have seen as they have been sent out by Jesus to go preach and teach and work miracles. Go back, you're in Mark 6. Go back to verse 7. Mark 6, 7. "And Jesus summoned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs, and gave them authority over unclean spirits." Skip down to verse 12. "And so they went out and preached that men should repent, and they were casting out many demons, and they were anointing with oil many sick people and healing them." Now verse 30. "The apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught." So they tell Jesus the news about John, they report to Jesus about Herod, but at the same time, what was their mood? And so number three, write down immeasurable joy. Just immeasurable joy. Because the mood of the 12, as they start talking to Jesus about their own experiences, is one of celebration. And I can only imagine that they're all talking at once. Maybe Peter is describing a lame man that has been healed. Maybe John is telling Jesus of all of the people that came to listen. Maybe Andrew is telling about healing someone who's epileptic. Maybe Matthew is saying, "Lord, the demons fled from us." Maybe Peter is saying, "Lord, you should have seen the crowds of people."
And as they began to talk about what they have done, they were just very enthused because Jesus had sent them out to teach and work miracles, and they had taught and worked miracles, and they couldn't wait to tell him about it. Because they've never done anything like this before. They were ordinary men. These guys were fishermen and tax collectors and just common Galileans. And so it's a very emotional moment for them. And they're just bursting with emotion. So here is the heart of Jesus on the same day. His heart is walking the pace of a funeral march and turns around, and now he's rejoicing at the success of his men whom he had sent out to preach and teach and work miracles. You remember when Paul said in Romans 12 and verse 15, weep with those who weep, rejoice with those who rejoice. Remember that? There are some days you do both. There are some days you do both. It's amazing oftentimes how close together weddings can be to a funeral. And there are times in our lives when we just are faced with these conflicting emotions. So immeasurable joy as they're just bubbling over with excitement. If you're taking notes, write down number 4, immense crowds. Immense crowds. We won't go back to Matthew 14 right now, but back in Matthew 14, Matthew talks about, he uses the word multitude, or some translations render it crowds of people. And that's kind of vague to us. You really can't put a number to that. And so in Matthew chapter 14 down in verse 21, Matthew says, okay, let me put a number to it. And Matthew puts the number at 5,000 men besides the women and children, he says. So if there's 5,000 men, what is the crowd? 10,000, 15,000, 20? I don't know. Here's the point. Jesus has sent the 12 out to preach and teach and work miracles, and they did. And they're telling all of these people about Jesus. And all of the people's response as they hear and they see, their response is obvious. We want to meet him. We want to meet this Jesus who gave you this power and gave you this authority. We want to meet him. And the 12 said, well, follow us. We're going to go back to him. Come with us. And so when the 12 come to Jesus, it's not just 12. Hundreds, thousands of people are following. And so they return to Jesus with a crowd. I'm still in Mark chapter 6. Look in verse 31. And Jesus said to them, the 12, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while. And then a parenthetical, for there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. Now, that sums up this day. Many people coming, going, not even have time to eat. Do you ever have a day like that? Do you ever have a day like that? Every mother has had days just like that. Every mom has had days where everybody wants a piece of mom. And so mom is helping Susie with her fractions, and she's helping Johnny with his nouns. And Junior's back in the bedroom trying to baptize the cat. The Amazon guy's banging on the front door. The biscuits are burning. The phone's ringing. Everything's going wrong, you know, all at once. Anybody who's ever taught school understands how all of that works. I always tell people as a preacher, I always tell people, don't tell me anything important in the foyer. Don't tell me anything you want me to remember in the foyer, because it probably ain't going to happen. Because you got people coming at you from all directions.
Somebody's telling you about your, oh, that was a really good sermon, but you should have added this. And somebody else says, well, I don't know that I agree with that point you made there. And so, and then somebody else is telling you something, and it's just kind of, everybody's just kind of coming at you, you know. I can't imagine this. I can't imagine the 12 coming back to Jesus and talking to Jesus about their great success and saying, look, Lord, look at the people who have come with us. They all want to meet you. And so Jesus took in all of this that he's dealing with and says, we got to get away. We need to leave here. And we need to go find a secluded place and rest. And there are times when we all need that. Jesus needed time alone. He needed time with the 12. He needed time to process all of this. He needed time to grieve. And he said to his men, let's leave. And let's go away where it's quiet. So think about what all he's facing. News of the death of John. Caution regarding Herod. Celebrating the success of the 12. Suffocated because all of these people all want to meet Jesus, reach out to Jesus, touch Jesus. So you got bereavement, jeopardy, jubilation, bedlam, all at the same time, on the same day. And it would be enough if we just stopped there, but we don't stop there because the day's not over. So Jesus says, we've got to get away. That's in verse 31 of Mark chapter 6. And so verse 32 of Mark chapter 6, they went away in the boat to a secluded place by themselves. And so in my mind, I see Jesus and the 12 making their way through this crowd of people and getting in the boat at the shore of Galilee and setting sail and leaving behind all of those people. Jesus made an attempt to get away from all of those people. Here's the kicker. The people had other ideas. So we're going to go to Luke's account in Luke chapter 9 and verse 10. Luke 9 and verse 10. Luke 9 and verse 10, when the apostles returned, they gave an account to him of all that they had done. Okay, we've already talked about that. Taking them with him, he withdrew by himself to a city called Bethsaida. But the crowds were aware of this and followed him. Now, Jesus and the 12 are in a boat. And they're setting sail across Galilee. And these people decided to follow. Now, they're not going to follow in a boat. They can't have enough boats for this many people. So they just hiked it. From where they were, it's about 6 miles around to where Jesus is going to land on the beach at Bethsaida. And Jesus is not exactly in a motorboat. And so by the time Jesus and the 12 reached the shore of Bethsaida, guess who's waiting for them? All of these people who he had left behind are now standing on the shore. And surprise, surprise, I can see it in your eyes. They're there, you know. So I wrote down number 5, insensitive interruptions. Insensitive interruptions. Because what Jesus had in mind for the rest of his day and what the people had in mind for the rest of his day, two different things. What Jesus wanted and what Jesus got, not the same. Does that sound familiar? Here's a young couple, and they so desperately need sleep. And they get a colicky baby. Or we so desperately need to catch up on work and we get further behind.
Or maybe we've had one of these crazy, crazy weeks, and we keep telling ourselves, if I can just get to Saturday, just get me to Saturday, I just want to rest. And so finally we get to Saturday, whew, I got to take a breather, I got to take a break. And we get to Saturday, 8 o'clock in the morning, on our door. And it's our next door neighbor. And he says, hey, I got a bit of a plumbing problem, and I know you're pretty good at that. I think it'll only take you about 10 minutes. Could you help me? How long is 10 minutes with a plumbing problem? How long is that? Huh? 5 hours? 2 trips to Lowe's? You know, there goes your Saturday. We all understand that. We get that. So here's my point. When you have a day like that, Jesus knows how you feel. There were days, I'm sure, that his pulse raced. There were days when his eyes were weary. His heart was heavy. He knew what it was like to crawl out of bed early and to have people keep him up pretty late. Now, I'm not sure we believe that. I think when we think about Jesus, we think of the Isaiah 53 Jesus, the Jesus who endured the heavy-duty tragedies of life, the man of sorrows, the one acquainted with our grief. That's the Jesus we know, and that's the Jesus we need. But here's the question. I think we never ask it out loud. Can God relate to the everyday hassles and headaches of my life? Can God relate to what I'm going through? And Matthew and Mark and Luke and John all say yes. And maybe that's the reason all four of them talk about this day. No other event except the crucifixion and resurrection is told by all four writers. Not his birth, not his temptation, not his baptism. All four chronicle this day. And I've often wondered about that. It's like they're writing for us knowing that we're going to wonder, does God really know how I feel? And their message again and again and again is, yes, he gets it. He knows exactly how you feel. There was a little boy out in the driveway, and his dad had put up a 10-foot regulation basketball goal, but the boy was too little. He's got the ball there, and he's shooting at the basket, and he's not strong enough to make the ball go that high. And so dad gets home from work, pulls in the driveway, walks over, grabs the basketball, whew, swish, says, that's how you do it, son, that's how you do it. And he hands the ball to the little boy, and the little boy pushes the ball. He's just not strong enough. And the dad just kind of grabs the ball and says, whoosh, you know, and that's how you do it, son, you got to do it that way. And the little boy shoots again and misses, and the dad now is getting frustrated. And the little boy says, Dad, it's easy for you up there. You don't know how hard it is for me down here. You can never say that about God. God, it's easy for you up there. You don't know how hard it is down here. Because of the many things Jesus taught us, one critical point is God knows how you feel. In John chapter 1 and verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And verse 14, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Hebrews 4 and verse 15, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. When I was in school, I learned about double negatives. That when you have a double negative, it's a positive. And so what he's saying there is we do have a high priest who can sympathize with us. And that's the message of this day. You know, a politician puts on a hard hat and walks into a factory. And he walks around shaking hands. The cameras are rolling. And he acts like he's just one of the ordinary workers. Or a social worker goes into the inner city and sleeps on a grate with the homeless. Or the general walks into the mess hall and he sits down with the enlisted men and he eats a meal. What's the message? The message of all of them is the same. I understand. I can relate. I know what you're going through. But the people in the factory know, the workers know, that when the cameras turn off, the politicians disappear. And the homeless knows that the social worker will be back in her bed tomorrow night. And the privates know that for every meal the general eats in the mess hall, he'll eat dozens in the officers' club. Nice try. Jesus did not come here for photo ops. He did not come here to give out sound bites for the evening news. He came and pitched his tent and stayed. And he said, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man, what? Has no place to lay his head. So from the funeral to the factory, from the frustrations of a schedule that just gets thrown at you sometimes, God knows how you feel. When you tell him you have reached your limit, he understands. When you shake your head at impossible deadlines, he shakes his too. When your plans are interrupted by people who have other plans, he's been there. By the way, back in Matthew 14, the disciples were a lot more stressed out than Jesus. Let's go back to Matthew 14. Look how stressed they were. Matthew 14 and verse 14. Matthew 14, verse 14. Jesus is going to leave the people and get to a quiet place. Now, verse 14. When he went ashore, he saw a large crowd. And he felt compassion for them, typical Jesus, and he healed their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This place is desolate and the hour is already late. Send the crowds away that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." They said, "Lord, you have been so patient with these people. You have taught these people. You have healed these people. You have accommodated these people. Lord, if you don't send them away now, you're going to have to feed them." And Jesus' response in verse 16, "They do not need to go away." Turning to the 12, "You give them something to eat." He wanted to see if their faith had reached a depth that they could look at Jesus and say, "Lord, you can do all things. We've been out here working miracles because of the power that you have given to us. This is nothing for you." He wanted them to just not even blink in the presence of God. Instead, they looked at Jesus, the bread of life, and they said, "You've got to be kidding. There is no way." So number six, I first wrote down doubting friends, and then I realized, no, I got to start with an I. Inept assistance, that's the best I could do. Inept assistance, if you want to stay, doubting friends. They looked in the eyes of the bread of life, and they said, "We don't have enough bread. We can't do this." So here's the six things. Same day. Intense sorrow over hearing about the death of John the Baptizer. An immediate threat, the same Herod is looking for you. Immeasurable joy at the celebration of the 12 who have come back to tell him all the things that they have done. The immense crowds of people, multitudes following him everywhere. Insensitive interruptions. Jesus sought rest and just got more people. And now inept assistants, doubting friends who look at Jesus and they say, "Lord, this is impossible." Calm. Chaos. Now then, did Jesus stomp his feet and demand his own way? Did Jesus scold the 12 for not finding a beach that was secluded? Did Jesus rebuke the crowd and say to these people, why did you not bring your own food? He didn't do any of that. He stayed calm. And in the midst of all of this chaos, he fed them. Verse 18, he said to them, bring them here to me. Ordering the people to sit down on the grass, he took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food, and breaking the loaves, he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they picked up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 full baskets, and there were about 5,000 men who ate besides the women and the children. All in the same day. I love the story of the little boy who went into a pet shop and he wanted a puppy. And the store owner showed him a box with a litter of pups, and the boy looked at the puppies. He picked up each one, looked at them, put them back. And after several minutes, he walked up to the owner and said, I picked out the one I want. How much is it? The man gave him the price, and the little boy promised to be back in a few days with the money. Don't take too long, the store owner said. Puppies like these will sell quickly. The boy turned and smiled and said, I'm not worried, he said. My puppy will still be here. So the little boy went to work, weeding and washing windows and cleaning yards. He worked, and saved his money. And when he had enough for the puppy, he came back to the store. And he walked up to the counter and laid down a pocket full of wadded up bills. The store owner sorted and counted the cash. And after verifying the amount, he smiled at the little boy and said, okay, son, go pick out your puppy. And the little boy reached into the back of the box and he pulled out a skinny dog with a limp leg and started to leave. The owner stopped him. Don't take that puppy, he said. That puppy's crippled. That puppy can't run with you. That puppy can't play with you. He can't fetch. No, son, get one of the healthier pups. No, thank you, sir, the boy said. This is exactly the kind of dog I've been looking for. And as the boy turned to leave, the store owner started to speak but remained silent because suddenly he understood. For extending from the bottom of the boy's trousers was a brace for his own crippled leg. Why did that boy want that puppy? Because that little boy knew how that felt. And the point of the lesson this morning is, Jesus knows how you feel. And he loves you with the compassion of that little boy. And he paid a tremendous price to take you home with him. That's the message. And that's why all four writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, talk about this one day in the life of Jesus. So the next time you have one of those days and the thought crosses your mind, does God know how I feel? Yeah, he does. Yes. Well, I'm going to quit early. I don't know what else to do. You know, the older I get, the shorter I talk because I knew a lot more when I was in my 20s. I just knew a lot more, you know. And the older you get, the more you realize, the less you know. And sometimes you just quit. So we're done. All right, thank y'all.